Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Welcome to another week of continued success. I am Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Fight. And with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports to talk about the Phillies. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
Liz, we watched a lot of this baseball, I think, is kind of the difference. I think I was getting the sense that this was a lot more witnessed of a series, these four games with the Braves. We knew this part of the schedule was going to be really tough, and we knew the Phillies, you know, they've sort of been hanging out at two games out of the wild card for what feels like 8 or 9 months now. And, you know, that position hasn't really changed. We talked, I think, last week about the stutter steps the Phillies have taken, splitting series with, like, the Reds and losing a series but then winning the next series. And, honestly, their opponent hasn't really dictated, it doesn't feel like, what has happened. We talk about this, the back half of September being a particularly rigorous schedule for them. Still seems that way. Those five games in 4 days against the Nationals still loom large, I think, near the end of September. But with everything on this team being so, you know, effing random, do you think that the opposition even really factors into what happens in the game anymore?
Not really. I don't know. You know, I was thinking recently, you know, about why, you know, fans of wildcard teams aren't coming to games in droves. And, you know, because every team is having consistency problems, every wildcard team. I have to wonder, is anybody really enjoying this season? Like, besides Yankees fans and Dodgers fans. And Dodgers fans, I follow a number of them. They've been blessedly quiet. They kind of know at this point, like, no, this is an embarrassment of riches, and if we say too many things, everyone will come after us. Yankees fans have no fear about that. They don't care. But, like, aside from those two, is anyone enjoying this season?
Well, this is what we're supposed to enjoy, though, isn't it? I mean, the race coming down to
the
wire.
Games.
Well, that's true, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, my colleague Matt Ahalt at Yahoo, he tweeted a picture. You know, he covers the Mets for us, and he tweeted a picture of Citi Field. He's like, it's empty. You would have no idea. It's like a coffin in here. And I'm just like, someone mentioned that about the Phillies recently, and I'm sure it's different for the Cubs because they're, you know, they have a, you know, it's the Cubs. They have a lot of people coming to their games. It's a little different, but it doesn't seem like Cubs fans are definitely not enjoying the season. Brewers fans are in denial about, you know, what's happening to their season.
It has been interesting. One thing I've been reminded of this year is fans of good teams will always find something to complain about in regards to their good team. And honestly, I will fault them when I'm not them, but I can acknowledge that when we were watching an elite team in Philadelphia, we always also had things we were poking at about the team as well. They just become more specific things because you can do the broad things well. That's why you're a good team. And you're really just poking at that because you're like, I want to find the things that could potentially make this go away. Because when you're watching a good team in first place, like the Dodgers have been for the entire season, you're just kind of thinking like, I'm enjoying this. But based on what you're talking about, it's rare to even, I mean, I know it's crazy to say, but it's rare to enjoy baseball for as long as that. Because A, it's a very long sport. The games can be very long. Sometimes you can lose in a very gut-wrenching fashion. And the reason that teams like the Phillies and the Mets and the Brewers are all in the position they're in is because they aren't reliable, because they are so frustrating. You know, they're not the Dodgers. They can't just, like, break off a couple of series wins. They don't have a deep roster full of good players. They have a bunch of lottery tickets and wild cards, and the Phillies are, like, still developing in some small, isolated cases. And the players that were supposed to make them carry them over the top haven't been, or hadn't been, as effective as people wanted them to be. At this point, the Phillies are probably was I really going to say the Phillies have probably been playing some of the best baseball they have of the season, which is crazy to say. It's just it comes in, you know, isolated pockets. One night they produce at an insane level and are able to stay toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in the National League in the Braves, who won their 90th game in Philadelphia during the series. And the
unsustainable.
Next night, and the next night, you know, they drop a series to the Marlins, who have been in last place for all the entire season. You know, like this, and then the different examples of that exist in Chicago, in Milwaukee, in New York. So, you know, I don't really blame people for being like, yeah, we're two games out, but this team is so frustrating. It's not worth paying, you know, $150 to drive my family down there and get everybody a hot dog. Well, at the same time, though, don't you feel like that's a difference? Like, I remember being, we kept comparing this to 2007. Like, hey, the 2007 team was out of it this much at this point. They had to win, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, mathematically, that might be comparable. But culturally, weren't more people down at the stadium in Philadelphia during that run? Weren't people, like, excited and like, yeah, there was a feeling of, I think they might do this, you know, okay. But, like, maybe that team, I'm sure there are other differences. It just seems like culturally, yeah, when you look at the standings, shouldn't people be more excited? And they're not. And I totally get it.
I mean, people will show up if they actually make it. And if the game happens to be in Philadelphia, they'll show up. They'll go. But, you know, you mentioned lottery ticket players. Like, the entire season, at this point, it feels like a lottery ticket. I think that's the problem, is that there's nothing to indicate that any of these teams could pull away, because none of them have.
Mm-hmm.
None of these teams have pulled away yet. No, like, the Brewers were very good last year, and they haven't. They just lost a bunch of, you know, they just lost Christian Yelich. You know, the Cubs have pretty much the same roster they did 2-3 years ago. You know, and none of those players have gotten appreciably worse, and yet, you know, I think no one feels that they couldn't, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the next 16, 17 games. Like, there are now, there's still too many games left for anyone to feel like anyone knows what's going to happen. Like, and, you know, admittedly, that's the fun. And in past years, I've been like, yes, there's a big race. The Phillies have not been involved, and I'm excited. And now the Phillies are involved. I've watched so much baseball this year, so much inconsistent baseball, that, you know, who was it? Someone in our Slack said, you know, in response to Rhys Hoskins saying, you know, we just have to play to our potential, and we know what we can do. And someone said they haven't played to their potential over the past 140-some-odd games.
Yeah, what can they do? We still, like, don't know.
There are, like, 16, 17 games left. You've missed your chance. You have. If you're saying with 17 games left, well, you know, we just have to play to our potential, when you haven't done that already, the boat has sailed.
Yeah.
You know, the horse is out of the barn, whatever the metaphor is. You know, that's, it's over. It's not that it's over, but, like, the chance to show people what you can do is kind of gone.
I think that's fair. And on that note, you know, the note of this team has to become an exciting team in order to overcome the two-game deficit they're facing in the wild card. They had to play four games against the Braves this week to do that. And honestly, it made for a long week, Liz. I don't know about you, but this felt like a much longer week playing the Braves, and they split the series. They did not lose the series with the Braves, which is, again, crazy. But let me ask you this. So they split this series with the Braves. They got Aaron Nola go in game one. Nola doesn't have his best stuff. He goes six innings, but he gives up four earned runs, six hits, four walks. The Braves win 7-2. You know, Nick Pivetta comes in to relieve Aaron Nola. Anytime that's happening, you know, probably things aren't ideal. Nick Pivetta gives up three more earned runs. Ronald Acuna hits a home run to lead off. Josh Donaldson homers for the Braves. Freddie Freeman had a three-hit night. And the Phillies offense just couldn't respond. You know, they had five hits total. They just, you know, they weren't there that night.
You just named so many good players.
That was, yeah. Before I'm going to just talk about, do a real quick summary of the whole series. But before I move on to game two, I was thinking this the other day. Liz, the Braves, they're so good. They're so young. If the Braves were all wearing, like, Rockies uniforms, wouldn't they be such a cool, likable team?
Yeah, they would. they would be a great team. They would probably be my second favorite team. I'm like, Ronald Acuna is super cool. Mm-hmm. And he made that amazing mistake the other night.
Awesome, awesome mistake. Except for Josh Donaldson. He doesn't seem cool. He complains a lot.
He whines.
He whines a lot.
He does complain a lot. He seems kind of like a dick, honestly.
He seems like the kind of guy who's gotten in a physical altercation at a skate park.
Yes. Oh, my That's God.
That's the vibe I get from him.
He had to go to the skate park after he was kicked out of the local skating rink. For getting into too many fights and demanding that they play his favorite boy band music, which no one likes.
that was the Braves' 90th win. They beat Aaron Nola, which, you know, when you're a Phillies fan, you're like,
stupid.
You're like, hey, our best chance at starting this four-game series with the hottest team in the National League is to put Aaron Nola out there. And Aaron Nola, you know, they lost their fourth straight game that Aaron Nola started. And that's a bummer. That's a big old bummer. Humbling, you might say, if this team could be humbled anymore.
If you want to know why the Phillies aren't going to make the playoffs, that's like the headlining reasons. Because Aaron Nola hasn't been himself, and the rest of the pitching underneath him is not good.
Yes.
I don't care what Drew Smyly did recently. It does not matter to me. Without Aaron Nola doing well, the Phillies they really don't have a chance. They could make it to the play-in game, and maybe they'll leave it. Maybe they could even win it. But beyond that, they're going to get clobbered by whoever they face.
Well, see, and that's a topic that's come up as well. You know, you need Aaron Nola. You need an anchor to the rotation. And right now, Aaron Nola is that, even though they've lost the last four games he's started. That's his job. That's what he's there for. And that's what he will be for the team moving forward. On the one hand, it's nice that the biggest issue for the team is so clear.
Yes.
And in that they can improve it, you know, moving forward in the offseason. It's like not really any bones about, they can improve in a couple of areas, but really you got to attack that starting pitching pretty on the nose. You know, that's a clear issue. But Jason Stark had mentioned this, and it's been repeated last night during the game, actually, by Ken Rosenthal, that this Phillies team, part of the reason they didn't go hog wild at the trade deadline and acquire whatever, you know, a higher grade of pitching talent, they didn't even bother contacting Dallas Keuchel, who had a fun little tidbit after his start with the Braves, saying like, hey, you know, they never came to call me. I guess they felt like they didn't need me, and I bet they're second-guessing themselves now. I sure would be. And like, that's not a direct quote, but I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah,
but
just
that's,
about, though. He you know, felt basically enough about it to say it after his start where he beat the Phillies.
Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely right. Yep. So Ken Rosenthal repeated this notion. I don't know how official of a story it is, but basically the idea of the Phillies being like, we don't want to get good enough to definitely get into the wild card game, win that game, and then have to play the Dodgers because we don't think we'll be good enough to play the Dodgers.
What?
Which is absurd.
Are you fucking serious?
That was the notion that was submitted by Ken Rosenthal during the broadcast last night. Yeah. Which is crazy.
Ken, you know, for what I may think of some of his writing, he writes some stuff that I think is very pro, you know, definitely not pro labor, not pro player. But he doesn't make things up. Like, he doesn't make things up. If he's saying this, he heard it from a source, from the team. He's got actual team sources. That is bonkers.
Yeah.
We're not going to get good enough because we'll never be good enough.
Yeah, and this is from Ken Rosenthal on The Athletic. Wrote a story that we all read and you know, stirred up a lot of...
Which I thought was very good.
It was a very good story. Absolutely. It stirred up a lot of the negative things that we had kind of forgotten about, but also reminded us of all the frustrating things this team has already accomplished this season. And in that article, he wrote, "Yet, once the Phillies began to slump, their front office's thinking was, we don't want to go all out for the chance to play in the wild card game and then face the Dodgers in the division series. An honest assessment, perhaps, but also defeatist, sending the wrong message to players and fans. The Phillies were not the only team decimated by injuries. Anyone paying attention to the Yankees? How about the Nationals earlier this season? What about, just to name a few other contenders, the Athletics, the Twins, the Rays, and yes, the Braves?" So that thinking is crazy. And I remember Jason Stark tweeting something to that effect, and I don't understand how we didn't lose our minds about this. And because this Ken Rosenthal article also dug up the old Andy McPhail quote from back in July saying, you know, hey, are we going to make the playoffs? If you don't, you don't. Like, what the hell is that?
I know.
How do you say that? Like, I guess if, I mean, what Rosenthal wrote was McPhail said the team's goal was to have the quickest turnaround from a rebuild under a new regime to a playoff berth. The Phillies actually would tie the Cubs and Astros for the quickest if they made the playoffs this season, their fourth under McPhail and general manager Matt Klentak. That's team president Andy McPhail. But the way McPhail put it, if we don't, we don't. Crazy. Crazy.
I read that piece from back to front and I really... there was so much other stuff in it that I was paying attention to that I don't know how I missed it. And I feel stupid because I would have made a huge deal about that. That's maddening. Fire every... Like, I get rid of everybody who thinks that. Like,
seriously.
None of them were there when the Phillies won the World Series in 2008, but the Phillies won the World Series in 2008.
They also...
They beat pretty much every team they faced was better than they were. The Royals. The Mets almost won the World Series. So many teams that have not been, quote unquote, the best have won, which, you know, I say that I don't think they have a chance in the playoffs. That doesn't mean that I don't want them to make it and try, because you never know what could happen. Someone could fall into a gopher hole and disappear forever. You know, you have no idea what could happen on the team, what could happen in the moment. Like, we've seen it every playoff. Every year, there's something different, something strange, some team finding the strength from within to beat the best team in baseball and send them packing. It's happened to the Dodgers every year. They haven't won the World Series yet, remember? That is fucking infuriating. Oh, my God.
Every other team has had some level of, you know, we just wanted to rally together and we always knew we could win 8 games in a row. Every other team has had their moment, it feels like, this season in that regard, where they've like entered the wild card picture from a hot streak or looked like they could go on a deep playoff run, even if it's not something sustainable. Like, if they had undergone that surge at the end of the season, that's the kind of momentum that carries you through the playoffs. The Phillies haven't had that yet. And, you know, just because we complain about how inconsistent they are, which is completely, totally rightful that we do that, like,
yes.
doesn't mean we don't, as a rule, want the Phillies to win any game they're playing in, which it doesn't sound like the powers that be in the front office really give a shit if they do or not, which, you know, you kind of assume, like, okay, these are guys, they don't really have any, like, loyalty to the Phillies beyond them being their current employer. They're not like, oh, yeah, I love the Phillies. I know all about the Phillies. I have this passion for the Phillies. No, I'm sure in some capacity, a lot of people are thinking about their next jobs at the moment, because you're
right,
Liz.
Klintak better be.
Who the hell says that out loud and still intends for this to be a team people pay attention to? Still intends for this a team you can sell tickets for more than a dollar and have people come down and pay for concessions and buy souvenirs and care about what you have to say? Because when you're a team president and you say, hey, maybe we'll make it, maybe we won't, then you're doing your job absolutely horribly. We criticized Andy McPhail earlier this season for being a bit of a goober about, like, coming out in that press conference and being like, here's the new Shake Shack, here's our new stadium facilities, blah, 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 and really talking the team up in that regard. And it was comical to do that, but at the same time, that's kind of his job. He's the team president. He's basically an ambassador for the team. But where I don't get it is why he admits things like, oh, I don't really, you know, when he was being asked about the Bryce Harper negotiations and he was like, oh, yeah, I don't really know. I don't really pay attention to that. He's like, not living in Philadelphia, finger far from the pulse, by his own admission. But, you know, you either accept that or you're like, okay, that kind of, you know, why admit that? You know, you didn't have to do that. And then to come out and say, oh, I don't really, you know, maybe we'll make the playoffs and maybe we won't. Why does that word come out loud? Why is that? You know, if you feel that way, keep it behind closed doors, because it's frustrating enough when a team like last year looks like it doesn't want to be there. I don't think we have that going on necessarily this year. But to hear the team president echo that sentiment pretty directly is inexcusable. And frankly, the idea of not wanting to potentially win a wild card game because, ooh, I'm scared of the Dodgers waiting at the other side. Laughable.
God forbid.
This team should be a laughingstock of the league right now with sentiments like that floating around.
How
that is inexcusable.
Do the players know? Like, did the players read this and be like, oh, they didn't believe in us enough to get another pitcher? Because they're not stupid. they know that the pitching staff isn't good enough. Like, the hitting has been inconsistent, but they've got good hitters. JT Realmuto has finally found what we've been wanting him to find for the past month or so. He is the best catcher in baseball and an offensive threat every time he gets to the plate. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got, you know, the two most prolific walkers in all of baseball. You know, we've got guys who can hit the ball. They know that the pitching staff isn't good enough. Do they know that there is word out of the Phillies front office that they that the their own bosses didn't believe in them enough to go after Dallas Keuchel? That they didn't believe, not only that they didn't believe in them, but they almost didn't want, they didn't want them to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, making the playoffs and losing for a fan base that has been through, like, it's not just the rebuild, it's the loss of every significant player from the last big run. Like, we saw everyone leave in a way that was less than great. No one retired with the team specifically. Everyone had to come back because everyone left under less than ideal terms. It ended badly. For the fans to be able to experience the playoffs again and turn this team into the first team to make the playoffs since 2011.
And get to make all those comparisons and stir up all that imagery. I mean, we've been saying all season
merch that they'd get to sell. Like, I'm so angry. My
this
God.
This goes directly against the idea that we've been suggesting, which is that if this team does somehow get a wild card spot, Andy McPhail would run with that and be like, well, this was a playoff team. Do we really even need to change that much? Like, this was actually a good season. It sounds like he doesn't care about that at all. It sounds like if we're going to make the playoffs, we better be a World Series team. Otherwise, what's the point? And the point is, anybody who makes the playoffs is a World Series contender. Like you said, any dumb team can, once they make the playoffs, go all the way.
The Giants did it 3 times, and at no point were they the best team in baseball.
5 years ago, the ALCS was the Royals and the Orioles. I mean, you know, they were both better teams then, obviously, but like, those are two smaller market teams that the reason that that's such a distinct ALCS is because those are teams that have never been able in recent times sustain the level of success. You know, there wasn't like a pillar of the American League in that championship series. It wasn't like the Yankees and the Orioles or the Astros and the Royals. It was the Royals and the Orioles. I mean, this happens. Teams find these little pockets of success that are there's more momentum because of luck. Once you win one game, you just got to win the next game. I mean, the playoffs are a huge, huge gamble, and anybody who finds their way in has a chance of winning the World Series. So it's a very dumb, kind of hopeless mindset, and it's pretty much the last one you want to hear coming out of your front office. And frankly, I'm with you. Like, I don't think they're going to make any big moves because, you know, why would they? This is a good team, but like, if they cleared house up there, I wouldn't hate it at all. And frankly, seeing an attitude like this, it just kind of embodies that whole cold analytic approach that people hate about this team. Like, you want to act like they're not overusing analytics or they're not leaning too hard, but then to have your team president adopt a mindset of like, yeah, well, we'll either do it or we won't, and then we'll come back next year and we'll try again. I mean, what's the one thing they talk about Phillies fans being on every broadcast? Passionate. If you can't even pretend to echo that, like, you should pretend. Like, obviously it's pretend. We know it's pretend. When some like stiff white collar dude who hasn't been like to Philadelphia more than 3 times in his life is standing there going like, yeah, I really believe in this city and for this team and we love these fans. Like, nobody believes that, but you just say it. You just say it so we can pretend to believe it. And this whole theatrical production can move on, but he can't even do that. He can't even pretend to want to be at the head of a good team. He can't even pretend that he cares, that there's blood running through his veins. I mean, it's just, it's pathetic.
I mean, Andy McPhail is not in charge of any baseball decisions at all. Like, and I can get why he says these things, but then maybe don't open your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that things were done when everyone was hired was, Andy McPhail was hired to handle the day-to-day operations of the team. Matt Klentak was hired to actually put a team on the field. And so I will blame Andy McPhail for being stupid and for not understanding how to talk to the press or how his words are going to look. He's only been in baseball for 8 million years, the son of another well-respected, longtime baseball man. It's not like he should have any idea how to do this, right? But for Matt Klentak and the front office to not believe in the Phillies enough that they wouldn't spend money for a year, maybe two, of Dallas Keuchel, we should never stop talking about it. We should literally, like, and that's the thing. John Middleton listens to us when we, us being the throng, you know, the big group of Phillies fans. If we don't stop talking about it, if it's the only thing that we'll talk about, if there are articles on The Good Fight about it, if people are tweeting at the Phillies account about it, let's never stop. Because it's demoralizing. It really is. It's demoralizing to me that they didn't think they had a chance this year. Because if they had gone out and gotten Dallas Keuchel, how many more people would have been invested in the team if they'd seen them go out and be like, no, we can do this. Let's get a good pitcher and anchor the rotation and go out fighting with what we have. Let's put the best team on the field that we can. They didn't want to do that. What a bunch of pussies. I cannot believe that.
I think it just comes down to the general idea of, if you don't care whether or not you make the playoffs, why should anyone else, including us?
And if you don't want to make the playoffs, shut up.
Then what the hell are you doing?
I don't understand.
What is any of this for, if that's not the goal?
Just some pencil-neck geek behind a desk telling us, well, the probabilities say that we shouldn't really, you know, we shouldn't spend this money now because the chances are... Shut up!
Mm-hmm.
This is baseball. What happened to faith? What happened to just going all in? It was barely a decade ago when the Phillies did that. And things have changed in baseball and on the team so much that they're looking at a fucking balance sheet to tell them whether or not they should go for it and try to make the playoffs for the first time in nearly a decade.
Well, Rosenthal's story also mentioned that it's an odd philosophy for a team to take on that just spent a combined $572 million in free agency in the past 2 years, which is another pretty solid point. So I think you're right. I think this should be a topic that keeps coming back. It has successfully been stifled a bit. This has not been a frequent topic of conversation in regards to the Phillies.
No.
And only got stirred back up because of the Rosenthal article.
Yeah.
We're going to come back and talk probably a little more about this because it's fresh on our minds. And also the Braves series with the Phillies that just concluded last night right after this break. Well, as we were trying to discuss but got sidetracked by the... by the jackassery of the Phillies, some of the statements the Phillies front office has made this year. But yes, the Phillies did just split a series with the division-leading Braves, the extremely dominant-looking Braves. Lost Game 1 on Monday with Aaron Nola starting, like we said. Game 2, they come back out with Jason Vargas on the mound. Winds up being a bullpen game as Vargas only goes 3 innings,
shocking,
allows 2 earned runs, 4 runs, and 6 hits, and 3 walks. But they win this one, barely hanging on. Phillies by 1 run, 6-5. This is exactly what we're talking about. You get utterly dominated the one night with your ace on the mound, and then you got to use this picked-apart bullpen to win a game against the hottest offense in the league and manage to do it by 1 run, no less. Atlanta starter Max Fried went 5 innings, and the Phillies' offense actually came to life a bit. Bryce Harper had a 2-for-4 night. Corey Dickerson had a 2-for-4 night with 3 RBI. Realmuto hit a home run. Harper hit a home run. Scott Kingery hit a home run. Dickerson hit 2 home runs. I mean, that was a game the Phillies needed to. I mean, every game they play right now is a game they need to win, and this one was no different. And they somehow managed to do that. Hector Neris came out and got the save in the 9th inning with a strikeout. Not a whole lot of interesting stuff going on there. I think he did allow. No, he didn't even allow any runners. That's right. That was a quick save. Really quick. He actually, Matt Joyce led that inning off and hit a line drive almost right into Rhys Hoskins' glove on the first pitch. So that was like, all right, helpful. Also the night of Scott Kingery's inside the park home run, which you mentioned earlier, of Ronald Acuna jumping up, making an Adam Haseley type catch. But
he's a gorgeous
cat. in his celebration, ball slipped out of his glove, and Kingery was fast enough to make it around the bases.
Well, mostly
so
because
that was awesome.
Acuna friggin' pointed at it a couple of times. Like, I caught it. Like, no, get the ball in.
Acuna tried to have, he had a Chuck Knobloch moment. He tried to have a complete nonverbal committee meeting with the umpires while Scott Kingery was circling the bases.
The game's still happening, dude.
Liz, the Baseball Reference tweeted that that was the first Phillies inside the park home run since Nick Williams inside the park home run on the last day of the 2017 season.
Yes.
And Liz, I almost wrote something on this, but I felt like it was almost too wistful, too goofy, and wound up scrapping it. But I'll mention it here that, I mean, being reminded of that inside the park home run, I'd forgotten about that. Narratively, that inside the park home run was supposed to really send a message. And it was kind of funny to think like, oh yeah, we thought at the end of 2017, you know, the clouds are lifting. We've got this crazy free agency in the near future. Wasn't happening that next year, but in 2019, we were obviously looking forward to the free agency class that Machado and Bryce Harper were going to be in. Rhys Hoskins had just come up and just made history on his terrifying home run rampage. We had all these young players and Nick Williams and Aaron Altair and Aaron Nola and guys we didn't know what their futures held, but it seemed like there were enough of them and there was enough promise that there was going to be this new crop of talented players coming forward and the National League was going to be put on notice because look what Nick Williams can do. I mean, an inside the park home run is the biggest, most adrenaline pumping play in baseball. And, you know, to end the season like that with Rhys Hoskins having shown us that he was probably like a cornerstone slugger that's going to be a part of this team in the future. I mean, it was all very exciting and it was all pointing forward. And no one probably could have guessed that 2018 would have been such a disappointment for the last 2 months. No one could have guessed that this team would improve in the ways it improved and still be so painfully mediocre. I don't know. I mean, it was just worth remembering how we felt on that day, the last time the Phillies had an inside the park home run, and compare it to how we feel this time. You know, it was still exciting. I'm glad it happened, and I really wanted to win 3 out of 4 of this series. Well, hell, I wanted to win all 4 of them. Why not? But realistically, it didn't seem like that was possible. And the fact that they split, it honestly feels like a miracle.
Yeah,
as I tweeted. As I tweeted during this 6-5 win on Tuesday, every out, it feels like a miracle against this Braves team. So, I don't know. I mean, do you feel like there's a discernible difference between your outlook when Nick Williams hit that inside the park home run versus Kingery's on Tuesday?
Well, the future, when you're living the future, it's always different than when you imagined it.
I disagree.
You know, I mean, I remember that. I mean, you never know who's going to be part of the future team. All we had was the guys that we had, you know, and I don't think there was anything. I mean, of course, there's nothing wrong with feeling that way. But now you sort of have a more definite picture of the future. You know that Nick Williams is probably not part of it. But you know that Scott Kingery, who was signed to that contract, is going to be on the team for another 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And so you know what you have because he's worth having on the team for that long. Oh, God, what a revelation. He has been the saving grace of the season for me. With Aaron Nola struggling so much, seeing him emerge and be the player that we all wanted him to be last year is just so glorious. Like, I couldn't be happier for him because I imagine last year could not have been the most fun.
Well, let me ask you this then. I actually tweeted last night after Adam Haseley made another great catch and hit a home run that Adam Haseley is the best story from the Phillies this year. And I didn't get a lot of passionate disagreements, but I got people mentioning JT Realmuto. Somebody liked Harper better. Again, I wasn't saying Adam Haseley was the best player on the Phillies this year. Obviously, that's not true. More that it was the best story. And as I pointed out, JT Realmuto, you know, he was supposed to be the best. He came here and he's been the best. I mean, I'm glad he's here and I want them to lock him up. But as far as the best story, I mean, there's an element of surprise to Adam Haseley's success.
Yes.
Where would you? I feel like they have a legitimate center fielder now that is going to be of great use to them moving forward. Obviously, there's the chance they use him as a trade chip to acquire more pitching talent. But you know, we'll see what happens there. The point is, this kid has been playing such amazing web gem after web gem on defense. I mean, that's something this team had been missing in the outfield. An incredibly mobile outfielder who can play center, who can cover a lot of ground, who can make those catches at the wall, who takes the right first step. And then who also has shown some flashes of success with the bat as well. Where do you rank Haseley and Kingery as far as the best stories of the season for the Phillies? And if maybe you don't think it's either one of those.
I think it's definitely one of those. I think I'm a little bit more attached to Kingery because of last year, because of his struggles and seeing him overcome them and become more comfortable. You know, and while they're continuing to be uncertainty about where he's playing, because that was the big thing last year. I mean, who knows what really changed? Maybe it's just, you know, the expectations are gone. You know, I'm no longer the thing that has to work for the Phillies to be good. So I think that's why I gravitate more towards Kingery. But Haseley is a success story, at least in the short term, from the Phillies farm system. And they have not had a ton of those recently. You know, like Kingery is one of them, and Nola, when he's doing well, is one of them. But he was a guy that wasn't, I don't think he's been tremendously well thought of. It's not like everyone thinks he's a bum, but.
No, he was the 8th overall pick in the 2017 draft. But, I'm sorry, wait, I'm talking about Haseley. Are you talking about
Haseley? I'm talking about Haseley.
Okay, yeah. So he's the 8th overall pick in the 2017 draft. So, but at the same time, the Phillies have been picking high because of their bad finishes over the past few years. And it's been a widely held notion that there hasn't always been the deepest talent pool year to year for the years that they have been picking very high.
Oh, I mean, Mickey Moniak.
Mickey Moniak. And, you know, we love Mickey, and it's great to see him have some of the success he's had this year. But it's fair to say that there wasn't a Bryce Harper or a Mike Trout available the year the Phillies had the top pick in the draft. And then after that, yeah, picking Adam Haseley was by no means a sure thing. He was a great, talented player, a pitcher convert. But, you know, you had high hopes for him. But at the same time, there was no guarantee that things would work out. I mean, anytime you draft a player, it's like, does this kid become an effective major leaguer? Only time will see you in 5 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And here we have Haseley, who was drafted in 2017, got promoted from AA to AAA this year in late May, and 4 days later made his major league debut out of necessity due to injuries on the Phillies roster. And here he still is. So that's why I kind of hold that up as the best story of the year. But I totally agree with you.
It's so unexpected. Like, you would expect Kingery in a way to fix, you know, to do better. Because we all knew he was a better player than what he showed us last year.
Yes.
But Haseley, you know, dealing with this year, the way he made his debut, that he essentially just spent, you know, a couple of courtesy days in Lehigh Valley before making his way up. You know, it's a great story, and to see him succeed and to be like, you know, today's web gem is, oh my God, it's a Phillies player. You know, like whenever a Phillies player is at the top of something, it's still been so long since that's been true. Like, that's why last year with Aaron Nola was so delightful. It's like, hey, one of our guys is the best at something. It's been so long since a Phillies player has been the best at anything, even if it's just a nightly web gem. It's been ages. And so it's so nice to see that and to see him getting some recognition at this point in the season, too. Like, to see him perform now after a full season of work, you know, when every team is sort of, you know, when the rubber is hitting the road for every team, I feel like this is when we get some of our best baseball of the year, when everyone's like, oh, crap, there's like less than 20 games left. Everyone's like really pushing hard, and to see him sort of break through and come up with like those big catches and those big hits when the Phillies actually need them. Like,
yeah.
You know, there great things this season. Like, I won't be able to criticize the front office for picking up Corey Dickerson, especially since the Pirates essentially gave him away for like a couple of drink tickets at the next, you know, at the next open bar gathering. Like, seriously, they gave him away for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the joy of watching JT Realmuto, too, and getting to say that he's the best catcher in baseball. And, you know, you'll get a Yankees fan in your mention saying, like, Gary Sanchez.
Just shut it.
But, like, there's actually no argument.
No, there's really not.
There's being a good hitter while also being a catcher, which is very hard to do and often considered a bonus, because the things JT Realmuto is good at are the things you need your catcher to be good at. Just shut down defense as far as base stealers and managing a pitching staff. And if you hear him give or read about him giving interviews like about the pitching staff, he's so informed about what they can do and where they can improve. I mean, he's kind of emerged as a vocal leader, seemingly from the outside, in that clubhouse. You know, he's a 28-year-old catcher. I mean, being a catcher brutalizes you and tears your body down. But that's why I think we're getting JT Realmuto in some really prime years. And that's why it's essential for this team to lock him up, because he is the best. And it's great that we get to say that, even on a team that's been as frustrating as this.
Well, and my colleague, Matt Aholt, wrote an article about JT Realmuto that was posted on Yahoo Sports yesterday. And the notion is that, Realmuto is sort of blossoming with this chance to actually make the playoffs, to be playing for a team that's actually playing for something, even if the front office doesn't necessarily want them to or think that they are.
Or care if they
do. Yes, exactly. But he is, just sort of rising to this challenge of needing to be better. And on top of that, I mean, he's crediting for everything that we've said about the Phillies staff this year. He's credited the Phillies trainers, because he said usually at this point in the season, his hips hurt, his knees hurt, his entire bottom half is in pain. He says he feels really good at this point in the season, and he never has before. He feels, this is why he's continuing to win fights with Gabe Kapler about playing all the time. I think in the article, Kapler characterized him as, like verbal fist fights. It's like a fist fight every time I want to get him to take a day off. He has successfully argued to Kapler several times that he should play, and won. Like, he wants to play. He holds Yadier Molina as a mentor, not as a mentor, but as sort of like an idol. That's not what I'm looking for. I don't know. I'm trying.
Example.
Thank you. That's it. The example that he wants to imitate is Yadier Molina, who, there were a number of seasons where he played over 140 games, almost 150 games, which is insane for a catcher. And if you ever want proof that a catcher can do that and still be effective long term, he's the dude to look at. Mm-hmm. So I'm so encouraged by him. They have to lock him up immediately. Oh, God.
There's a reason Yadier Molina drives everyone who isn't a Cardinals fan nuts, and it's because of his longevity and his skill at the position of being a catcher. It's just, it's infuriating. And the Phillies have a chance to have a catcher of the same caliber.
I want people to hate JT Realmuto like I once hated Yadier Molina. I don't quite hate Yadier Molina and his ridiculous neck tattoos as much as I once did. He's kind of grown on me as kind of one of those old school, angry, I will defend my team to the death, players. Those guys have really kind of grown on me. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Well, let's talk about the rest of this series real quick before we run out of time. The Phillies went 1-1 in the first two games of the series. Then they played the Braves on Wednesday again in a game where the offense found itself utterly stifled. The Braves won 3-1. Dallas, that was the Dallas Keuchel start. He was deeply effective against the Phillies, obviously, given the quote he gave after the game. It was a pretty satisfying moment for him, I'm sure.
Hope it made him feel good.
Six innings he went against the Phillies. He only allowed 3 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, and 8 strikeouts. On the other side, Zach Eflin couldn't even go 4 innings this time. Allowed 3 hits, 3 runs, none of them earned, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts, and a home run. That left things up to the Phillies' bullpen, which didn't allow any more runs after that, and really only 4 hits. So it wasn't the worst performance by the bullpen at all. You kind of just needed your offense to come through, and there were 2 moments where they probably should have. I mean, this game really hinged on one moment, and it was in the fifth inning. With 1 out, Phil Gosselin singled, Gene Segura walked, and JT Realmuto was hit by a pitch, loading the bases for Bryce Harper. And, I mean, this is the moment you win that game. Unfortunately, Bryce Harper grounded into a double play, and that threat was eliminated. The Phillies sort of mounted a bit of a thing in the ninth, again with 1 out. Adam Haseley singled, Cesar Hernandez singled, and with 2 on and 1 out, Brad Miller lined out to Dansby Swanson, which, that line drive goes an inch or two in a different direction, and the Phillies might have a better chance of winning the game. And Michael Franco popped out in foul territory with Josh Donaldson running in to make a catch over the railing to end the game 3-1. So that was a frustrating loss.
So
that was
screamy. I was so screamy.
That one was within their grasp. It definitely was. Instead, we get to cite it as a correct example as to why the Phillies probably should have tried to, if they wanted to win games like this down the stretch, why acquiring a guy like Dallas Keuchel kind of helps you out. Of course, you know, at the time, I can't remember what we were, if we were advocating for this or not. I don't know, you know, why I wouldn't have, but I'm sure that thought entered my mind. It's like, do they really need him? Nah, why do they need him for?
There are people.
This is why.
There are people on at the Good Fight, writers of the Good Fight, who didn't want him for various reasons, mm-hmm. because, you know, he wasn't good enough, or he's too old. There were reasons. I mean, maybe it was just people justifying to themselves, you know, like they're not going to get him, so this is why I don't want him. That way I won't mm-hmm. be disappointed. It's what Philadelphia fans have done since the beginning of time. But, yes. you know, he was a good pitcher that was gettable. You could pay money to get him on your team. The mm-hmm. Phillies, aside from Real Muto, which is the trade I'm glad they made and they should have made, the Phillies do not seem willing to trade prospects for players. Everyone yeah. they have, they don't like any player enough. I think maybe it was the Rosenthal piece. The ask for, it might have been a Nationals player. I'm trying to remember, there was an ask out there for some player and they wanted the
Tanner Roark.
Thank you, Tanner Roark.
They wanted Mickey Moniak.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Thank you. They wanted Moniak and they wouldn't give it up. And I'm like, why? Why? And like, Moniak yeah. is fine, but he's not the next Bryce Harper or the next Real Muto. Like, let's improve.
He's their
the
number
team.
One pick. He's their number one pick, and I get wanting to hold on to it. But at the same time, if you can turn him into an effective starter that helps you down the line, okay. But I get the idea of balking at, is our number one pick now Tanner Roark? Like, I do understand that. Like, you trade your best prospect in Sixto Sanchez. You trade your number one guy for JT Real Muto. Makes a lot of sense. Best at his position. One of the best players in the league. Probably going to get MVP votes.
Yeah, he is.
You trade your number one pick, who is, you know, not putting forth the best production you want to see from a number one pick, admittedly. But you trade that for Tanner Roark. Like, I get the emotional toll you are paying for that. It's at the same time, this team needed to improve its pitching and didn't.
And there can't be any attachment to Moniak. He was 2016. Was he the top pick in 2016? Because that was before, even if it's 2017, I think it's before Klintak. Maybe he's been here longer than I remember now. I don't even remember how long.
Oh, it's shocking, but you're right. It's 2016, yes.
And I don't remember when, off the top of my head, when Amaro was fired. And so if Moniak was a Klintak pick, I could see why he wants to prove. He wants to prove that he is good and that they should mm-hmm. hold on to him. You know, and I like...
He was. Matt Klintak was hired in late October 2015, yep. and Moniak was selected in the 2016
draft. That was his
draft,
very first ever draft pick as Phillies GM, so no wonder. No wonder mm-hmm. he doesn't want to give him up. So I would like... I mean, if he wasn't, I think he'd already be gone.
Yeah.
I think that. I think not so that too. That's what we were talking about, but, you know, you have to do this. You have to make the painful decisions. Like, we were happy that JT Real Muto was on the team, but we were sad to say goodbye to Sixto Sanchez, who had electric stuff even just in single A with so many injuries, and he's proving to be a great pickup for the Marlins. It was tough, but in the end it was worth it because he made the team better. Unless Mickey Moniak is on the team right now, there's no way he is making the team better. Make the team better.
It's a fair point, and I'm sure one that's going to be debated down the stretch here and into the offseason until the Phillies do successfully improve their team. And finally, last night in the series finale, Atlanta breaks off two runs in the first inning off Drew Smyly, who lasted four innings. And, you know, you're thinking... Great. All right. Well, this one's kind of in the bag here. But this series has had a lot more back and forth than I think people would have guessed. The Phillies, obviously, they won two of the games. One of them was deeply winnable. First game was kind of a wash, but they still did. They put their ace on the mound, so initially you thought maybe they had a chance at winning that game too. But in this game, Drew Smyly only goes four innings, allows three earned runs, four hits, a walk, and six strikeouts. He allows a pair of home runs. His ERA is down to 622. I don't know. Maybe it's down or up. Either way, it's over six, which not great for one of your starters. In any case, Braves score two in the first inning, but the Phillies answer with one on a Cesar Hernandez home run to center field in the first. Bottom of the second, they come back again. Adam Haseley hits his second home run of the series, puts the Phillies up 3-2. Third inning, come back again. Gene Segura hits a two-run home run, knocking in Rhys Hoskins. Phillies go up 5-2. Braves answer with an Adam Duvall home run. But in the bottom of the sixth, Cesar Hernandez singles and scores Michael Franco. Ronald Acuna does his thing, makes it a one-run game in the seventh. Phillies are up 6-5 after his solo shot. Then at the bottom of the eighth, Sean Rodriguez doubles in Adam Haseley, who is on base again. Gives them a 7-5 lead, and then JT Realmuto comes up and smashes a home run that gives the Phillies a 9-5
lead. In the pouring rain.
It's
beautiful.
Phillies score three runs in the bottom of the eighth, which were desperately needed. I would not have been able to sit still in that ninth inning if they hadn't scored those insurance runs. I was honestly ready to settle for one more insurance run, but they gave them three more.
I was amazed they got any. I figured they were going to go into the ninth with a one-run lead, and that would be it. I was prepared to gnaw at the tips of my fingers.
Well, on top of that, they'd also brought in Hector Neris to get four outs, I believe.
I mean, so I'm glad that they're trying to use him for more than three outs, but man, the Phillies need another closer. Woof.
I mean, the more you see of Hector Neris, the more concerning it is. Like, he allows base runners.
In so many years, we've seen him.
But in this series, you know, you saw a little bit less of that, and he didn't allow any base runners in this game, which was great. You know, he faced Dansby Swanson in the eighth, got him to line out to Sean Rodriguez on a hit that I assumed was going to score multiple runs, but wound up in Sean Rodriguez's glove. Comes back out, gets Charlie Culberson to pop out, and then strikes out Ronald Acuna and Ozzie Albies swinging to win the game. Like, I mean, that's some good stuff right there. So the Phillies split the series. And so my question, Liz, as we finish up here, did it mean anything?
Well, it meant that they split the...
There's still two games out of the wild card.
That's the thing. I don't know how many of these wild card teams they're going to play down the stretch. Like, it's really... A lot of this is... Like, at least half of this is out of their hands. Because they could go perfect to, you know, all the way up. But if every other team does well, you know, if the teams in front of them do well, they're screwed. There's nothing they could do. So they need to keep their... They at least need to keep pace. So I think it meant something in that... They didn't slip any further behind.
They have the Red Sox next on Saturday and Sunday.
Liz, the Red Sox haven't been, you know, stinking up the joint most of the season.
Then they have three games in Atlanta against the Braves again.
Oh God, I hate September.
Then they're on the road for like, I don't know, 11, 12 games. Then they play the Indians for three games. Then comes that five games against the Nationals in 4 days stretch. And then they finish up against the Marlins. And, I mean, you know, they can lose or win against any one of those teams. Like, honestly, I wish we talk about them not being able to win more than four games in a row this season. I want to take a look right now. Have they done anything for more than four games in a row this season?
I don't think they have.
I mean, the other thing being, you know, losing. I had the 2009 team queued up here, and I was like, wait, their longest winning streak was 10 games.
Where was I?
I missed that.
You're in a coma. You didn't want to tell
I'm off on that. Their longest win streak is four games. Their longest losing streak is seven games from June 16th to June 23rd, where they lost for a straight
week. I remember
that.
That was awesome.
Awesome.
That was great.
Yeah. Well, in any case, you know, they've got games ahead of them, which for this team is a struggle. Well, Liz, we do talk about the 2009 team on this podcast a bit. So, I mean, I'll leave it up to you. We got a couple minutes left. I got a little tidbit we can talk about the 2009 team, but I got an interesting thing from 2019 we can talk about as well. Which would you rather discuss as we head out here?
That's a good question. I feel like we've got some good 2009 stuff coming up. Good/bad. We've made this quite the 2019 episode. Maybe we just stay with that. They've been... The one thing the Phillies are, it's interesting. They're frustrating, they're maddening, but they're interesting. And I would rather replay this season five times than any season between 2012 and 2019, 2012 and 2018.
All right.
Let's do it.
That's fair. All right. So Staying with the Braves, Liz, there was a story on MLB.com by Matt Kelly that came up the other day, and it was talking about how the Braves have their top three players, Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, and Freddie Freeman. They lead the game. They lead the National League in games played. All of them have played in 146 games. The Braves have a 9.5 game lead in their division. Yeah. Obviously, all three of those guys have generated at least 4 WAR. There are 4 other teams since the expansion era in which the top, like they had their 3 top players, also lead the league in games played. The 1999 Orioles, the 1998 Rockies, the 1992 Astros, and the 1965 Cubs. So the Braves are obviously an elite team. We've been talking about what a deep, good team they are. However, they've also benefited from the obvious component, which a lot of people forget about, having those players on the field. By comparison, the Phillies tried to plan for a team to be healthy and failed. They lost David Robertson, who had been a very healthy pitcher leading up to this point. They lost Andrew McCutchen, who had been a very stable, healthy player leading up to this point. Their top three position players in WAR are JT Realmuto, Bryce Harper, and Scott Kingery. Only one of them has WAR over 4. That's Realmuto with 4.5. Their biggest chunks of playing time have come from Cesar Hernandez and Rhys Hoskins. I don't know these people. They're not my friends. I don't know why I refer to them just by their first names. Cesar has generated 2.3 WAR. Rhys Hoskins, 1.9. So I guess my overall point here is you can have as many good players as you want, but I think the lesson from 2019 might be if you can't keep them on the field, they're not going to be worth anything to you. However, the Phillies haven't suffered from their position players being injured. I mean, they lost McCutchen. That was the turning point of the season. But Realmuto's been on the field, as we just said. He fights to be on the field. Harper's missed some pockets of time here and there, but he hasn't missed anything too significant. Kingery lost some time with a strained hamstring at the beginning of the season, but he's been out there too. I mean, there was some talk about how long the Braves could be this good, whether they are this good going into this series. I mean, they look like they're this good this year. I don't know if in the years to come they're going to be operating on this level. But, you know, this is a volatile sport to keep stockpiling your pitching staff. But I don't know. I mean, I guess my question is how much of a role are we blaming health and luck in the Phillies not being able to keep pace with the Braves this year? Because on the one hand, they lost some key players and their bullpen's been decimated. On the other, they have 3 good players who've been with the team for most of the year and just haven't been good enough as the Braves' top 3. So I don't know. What's your take on this?
It's a bullpen that's so mostly decimated. You know, and Jake Arrieta as well. But he, even when he's healthy, man, that's going to be a signing that we look back on and are probably not thrilled with in the end. If only because, man, I wish he would shut up sometimes. But I think, I mean, I'd love to say that it's because they couldn't keep their best players on the field, but I feel like the number of games that were put out of reach because of the starting pitching and because of the, you know, the offense couldn't hit anything is probably more than games that were ruined by a crappy bullpen. I could be wrong. That's just anecdotal from watching so many games this season. But you know, the bullpen's a problem, but it's not the only problem. It's far from the only problem. So, I don't know. I think the issues of the Phillies keeping pace with the Braves is a little bit more deep-seated. Man, the Braves are just going to cut through the playoffs. Or maybe they won't because history says they won't.
Yeah. And I mean, Scott Kingery, you're trying to look for, you know, the Phillies have needed big contributors all season long, and everybody's struggled at some point or another. Scott Kingery's batting average dropped from .311 on July 2nd to .269 on July 31st over the course of a bad month. It's dropped like, you know, what's math? 50 mm-hmm. points? 40 points? 40 points, sure, why not? His OPS dropped from .939 to .828. He's pretty much lived in that general area for all of August and now in September. That's kind of where he lives, a .260, .270 hitter with an OPS above .800 but below .850. I mean, that's fine. That's fine. I guess I'm just trying to figure out, do the Phillies just not have as good – there are their best players not as good as the Braves' best players?
I think that's it. That's really what I think it is. I think that's kind of the problem. And that's that's one of the things that I can't think about too hard going forward, because when I think about it, I'm like, they do not have a Juan Soto or an Ozzie Albies or an Acuna. They don't have that guy who's young and good, who's going to be on the team for, you know, another decade, and who's going to lead them. Like, the players they have just aren't as good.
Is that a 2019 problem or a generational problem?
I said to myself coming into this podcast, don't be so negative. You were so angry on Hinton season last week. But I think it's a generational problem for the Phillies. You know, they've got Bryce Harper, who has the potential to be exceptional. They have JT Realmuto, who is exceptional. And then there's some drop-off. There's a pretty steep drop-off. And the players that they had, that other teams have, that are good and young, are players that they drafted and developed. And the Phillies just don't have it. And that's not a problem that they can fix.
Right. I was going to say, and you'll notice the drop-off typically occurs after guys that they've acquired via free agency or trade and drops down to guys they have acquired in the draft. I mean, this team, you can say at this point, that's definitely been an area they have not excelled in, and it's led to a situation. Like you said, there hasn't been an elite prospect for fans to pin their hopes to watch come up through the system. But, you know, at the same time, you talk about guys like Scott Kingery taking a bunch of leaps forward. You talk about guys like Adam Haseley being extremely pleasant surprises in how effective and comfortable they look as major leaguers. And you know what? You come back next year and you never know who's gonna come back having made an adjustment or be even more comfortable or look even better. You never know who's going to blow up. And this team is set up to blow up. I feel like in a good way.
They are.
And like this year might be out of the question, but there's, you know, when you're leading off, not literally leading off, but when your roster has JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper on it, it's got some good hitters on it. Rhys Hoskins, I got more questions than answers about him this year, but you know, we've seen what a power threat he can be when he's not being as painfully streaky as he's been. And when you have young talent like Kingery and Haseley looking as good as and the potential to look even better, this team could easily be a Braves-style dominant team. They just need to acquire better pitching. They need to be a little more attentive, and they need to make us think that they care. Like, that's honestly, like, I want to see them make the playoffs next year. I'd love to see them make it this year, but if we're talking about next year, I'd love to see them make the playoffs next year. But I'd also like to believe that the front office has the same goals I do as a fan, which is to win the games and make the postseason and win in the postseason. But, you know, maybe they'll have another shot to convince us of where their motivations are next year.
You want a front office who wants to win. My God.
Yeah, it'd be nice, right?
I mean, I'll bring him up again. The one thing you never doubted with Ruben Amaro Jr. is that he wanted the team to win at all costs. And it's the only thing he wanted. And he would stop at nothing to make the team better. He didn't always do it in the best way, but he would do it because that was his priority and that was his charge. And it didn't come from John Middleton. That came from David Montgomery, who was the managing partner, you know, and president of the team for a million years. And so this changeover has not reaped the benefits of anyone being all in yet. And I'd love to see the front office be all in.
See, we got back to 2009 after all with Ruben Amaro. So, well, that's where we'll leave things on this episode of Continued Success. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, download all your favorite Phillies podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Trevor Strunk. There's a new episode from the annals of 1995 that was an absolute hoot. And of course, Continued Success with me and Liz. We'll have another episode for you next Friday. Phillies play the Red Sox this weekend. Okay.
Thank God they're not doing very well.
Everybody stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next week on Continued Success.